You're going to sit there and BS me to my face. You're saying all the things that you think are interesting. They don't care about all of that. It's like in an interview situation where somebody says, tell me about yourself. And you sit there and tell them about where you went to school, how many cats you've got, blah, blah, blah. They don't care. Or in an interview situation where somebody says, tell me what's your biggest weakness. They're not really asking you, tell me your biggest weakness. What they're really asking you is, are you going to sit there and BS me to my face?
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And I feel very grateful today to have Amy Bateman on. She's a career strategist, just launched her podcast as well, and is also a keynote speaker. So thanks so much for joining me, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me to join you. So I'm here in the UK. So it's the end of a busy day, but certainly have been looking forward to our conversation all day. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've enjoyed some good conversations with my UK guests. So and I have high expectations of this one as well, because I think you're a really great person to have on. You got really great experience, and I'm really keen to dig into some of that today.
Fab. Pressure. Okay, let's do it.
No pressure. My high expectations are just having a really fun conversation. So
lovely. Thanks, Alex.
Happen. Yeah. So I wanted to sort of start with you maybe sharing a bit about, so you are the founder of Career Cake, and comes with that a whole big journey. Would you want to share what Career Cake is to someone that hadn't heard of it, the journey that you went on there, and then we'll sort of unpack some different bits and pieces.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly. So Career Cake was actually not really meant to be a thing. But it turned out to be the biggest, craziest journey of my life. So I was a commercial recruiter, so a corporate agency recruiter. Had been doing that for a really long time, best part of a decade, really. And decided that there were a few instances that happened. Because as a recruitment consultant, you're very much there to help organizations find talent rather than help people get jobs. It's lovely when the two marry perfectly. That's great. And everybody's happy. But during times when the market is really low and there's dips and, you know, the economy isn't as buoyant, certainly something we faced globally in 2010, 2011, I was really struggling to find opportunities for the amount of talented people that were coming to our offices needing our help. And it was really frustrating. I am one of those people, I always say I'm kind of like a walking, talking Labrador. I wake up every morning thinking, how many people can I love today? That's me. I can be fierce when I need to be, but on the whole, I'm just, you know, out there loving everyone. So I felt like it really hurt me to see the amount of people coming into offices, sometimes in tears, sometimes broken. And we had no jobs for them. So I decided to buy a really rubbish camera. It was kind of like nobody was really doing anything on YouTube in 2010, certainly not in the career space. It wasn't the well-respected e-learning platform that it is now. And just thought, well, hey, I'll just make a couple of videos at home saying to people, you know, this is how you use LinkedIn as well. A lot of people that were looking for work at this time, prior to them being out of work, there was no LinkedIn. A lot of them, there was no internet, really. So the way people were finding work was massively different. So I thought, well, I'll just make a couple of videos so that they won't need me. So when they leave our offices, I'll be able to say, well, watch these videos. You don't need me. You can do it yourself. Just do this. And that was where, and I didn't want to call it Amy Bateman because, you know, I was like, well, who would possibly create a YouTube channel and give it their own name? I was so not clued up on personal branding at all. I thought it would be really arrogant if I called it Amy Bateman. So I just thought of a name and I like cake. So I just called it Career Cake. And that was literally all it was meant to be. And lo and behold, it got really big, really big. So I think that was like definitely because the advice I was giving was good. I was good at what I do. But also there were not many people doing career advice on YouTube, right? Mm. So there was not really any competition. So I got to sort of 10 million hits really, really quickly and built this beautiful, wonderful community. And in the end, quit my job. And that's all I did was, you know, sort of consulting, career coaching. Decided that I definitely wanted to work for the individual, not the company. And swapped sides. And then, yeah, Career Cake just blew up, really. It just became really big and bigger than what I could facilitate. So, and what I mean by that is that we were having lots of people would watch the content, and yes, because the content was good, but also because they were good, you know, they were really smart and they were hungry and out there being brilliant and showing the world how good they are. So they were getting the opportunities that they deserved. But then they'd be in the workplace and were having issues and would come back and ask me questions. So, you know, I'm gay. How do I tell people? Or I'm being bullied at work. What do I do? And these were all topics that, you know, 12 years ago when I founded Career Cake, I didn't know the answers to. So I thought, well, I know a lot of people that are smarter than me. So I raised investment. And I'm also quite fearless, and we might even come on to why I'm quite fearless later on in the conversation. But I decided I was just going to raise some money from investors. I'd heard about this whole venture capital world and angel investors. I'd watched Dragon's Den or Shark Tank or whatever it is that you people will recognize. I thought, well, I'll raise some money and I'll get loads of smart people in to make some videos and we'll put them on a website. And yeah, and that's and Career Cake, and that's what I did. I raised venture capital across a couple of continents, in Australia too. One of our investors was in Australia. And we brought 45 experts who all knew things that I didn't know into a studio here in the UK for them to share their stories and their advice, put it on a platform. And we actually helped more than 10 million professionals during our time in 42 countries, which is amazing. And then we were acquired 2 years ago. So there's a company, leading hiring skills platform based over in Dublin, that bought Career Cake about 2 years ago, took it to where I grew it to here. They certainly were able to take it to the next level. I kind of felt like I'd done all I can with it. Mm. And that was 2 years ago. And I had a baby. Done some consulting, done some speaking, done some mentoring, had a very, very well-deserved break. And I'm just getting back to it, as you quite rightly said today, with the launch of my new podcast.
Yeah. So launched in your this morning and my last night, just before I went to bed, I saw it pop up on LinkedIn that I was like, oh, it's launched, because I'd been looking and I was sort of like, I swear there's a podcast. And then I realized, oh, she hasn't launched it yet. She's just in the process. And then so when that came up, I thought, oh, I'll have a little listen of that before we catch up in the morning.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Alex here. Just wanted to reach out to everyone and say thank you so much for following along with the Brand My Career podcast. I'm really loving having the conversations that I'm having and bringing this content to people. I want to keep bringing more content to people. I want to bring stories of people's career journey. And one of the ways that I can be doing that is by getting your support. And one of the ways you can do that is by shouting me a coffee. On my website, you can find the link to shout me a coffee to help me keep bringing more content, building what I'm already have done and improving it, getting better, getting more and more people on and sharing their career stories and the lessons that they've learned along the way. So thank you for following along, and would you consider getting on board and helping me take it to new heights?
So going back to those early days, you've started posting a few videos on YouTube, which is kind of like the world that I'm living in at the moment, of this, the early days of getting yourself out there. What would you say are some of the key things that maybe you did in those early stages that really saw it do well outside of, I guess there is the element of, well, those early days of YouTube and that kind of content going out there, but clearly there was people going searching that stuff for a period of time where there's just nothing coming up. So there's obviously that element, like you said, of there was minimal competitors versus today. And it's interesting hearing YouTube talked about as an e-learning platform. That's something I haven't heard it termed of, but it's true, right? So what would you think are some of the key things you did then that saw it get that traction?
Yeah, great question, actually. Thank you for asking me that. Firstly, on that note of YouTube being a well-respected e-learning platform, actually, I work in the e-learning space, have done. I also work with LinkedIn Learning. I also mentor and advise other e-learning companies. And YouTube is always one of the biggest competitors for any e-learning platform. Maybe 5-6 years ago when we started, it wasn't so much. But I mean, what can't you learn for free on YouTube now, right? So it's a really well-respected e-learning platform now. But I think back in the day, and it's something that I used to encourage all of our experts that we used to bring into the studio to film, whether they were doing a course around leadership or active listening skills or how to stay motivated while looking for a job, whatever it was, is to remember that the people that you're talking to are smart as hell. That was a really big bugbear for me, is that there was a lot of content in the career space at the time that was talking to people, specifically job seeking, because that's how I started. That's the niche. Eventually moved into more sort of, yes, looking for a job, but also how to be awesome once you're in the job. But certainly that job seeking element, talking to people as if they're stupid. It was almost, I watched so much of it as part of the research before I decided to take investment and really grow the thing. And I was even on university websites and looking at the content that they were giving to students. And it was as if somebody, just because they gave them a camera and a microphone, that they thought that they were better than you. It's like, God, if I was watching that, looking for a job, being talked to like I'm a piece of something on the bottom of their shoe, I'd be really annoyed. So I think the first thing is to remember that you're the person listening is probably smarter than you in a lot of things, in a lot of areas. They might not have a job right now and they might be looking for a job, and you might know a lot about the little bit they don't know about, but there's going to be something that they know a lot about that you don't know much about. So certainly making sure that your consumer feels like you respect them. That was a really big one for us. And if anybody, I didn't care if they had a book to launch, if they had, you know, whatever they were promoting, 10,000 followers on Twitter, if they talk to people as if they're stupid in a condescending way, they were not allowed on the platform. So that was one thing. Don't underestimate your audience. And two, I always remember saying this, and we used to keep it on the office wall written down, is that nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And when you are giving advice or you're training anybody, especially around stuff to do with job seeking and careers, you know, some people take their careers more seriously than their marriages. This is really deep emotional stuff. People use their jobs as part of their identity. This is massive for people. And if it doesn't matter if you are giving the best advice in the world, if they don't believe that you give a crap about them, then why would they listen? Why should they listen? So I always used to find people to come in and give advice on a topic on the basis that they had to care about their audience, right? And I care a lot, probably too much sometimes. I'm an empath and, I care a lot. And I think that that's what the audience saw. And it's certainly something that I would encourage anybody to take into any kind of teaching, coaching or mentoring role.
And it's a solid career advice in itself, right? Like how you make people feel in the workplace is one of the best ways to advance your careers. If the people around you are getting value and feeling good after getting that value, then that's half the battle won, really.
You are so right. That is such a good point. Absolutely. It's why my company is called Seen, Heard, Valued. Limited. Mm. It's why my podcast is called Everything is about help making people feel seen, heard and valued. Mm. That's a great point.
Yeah. I wanna go back a bit. So I was just listening to the first podcast, and you open up a bit about your childhood and the journey that you went on there and in the foster system. How would you say that has shaped who you are today and the journey that you've gone on with Career Cake?
Okay, yeah, interesting. I think for anybody listening to this, it's really important to understand your emotional and social development. So anybody listening to this, maybe think about the experiences they had up to the age of 7, maybe then some of the experiences that they had as teenagers, you know, because we all have a story, right? I did spend the majority of my teenagers in various foster homes, didn't always have a huge amount of stability. And that's definitely shaped how I show up in the world, or how I did show up in the world as a young adult, certainly in my life, but also my early career. But we all have a story. You know, some people will have, you know, real, real horrific, traumatic stuff happen to them. Some people, you know, on the scale or the radar, they might feel like, well, actually, I didn't really go through that much. So what have I got to complain about? But you still went through stuff. You know, I always say to people, it's still important. It's still part of your emotional, social development. And it needs the time and the care to sit and think about all of the things that could impact you as an adult. Because the best way for us to win in life and in our career is to get self-awareness levels that are through the roof. It's the biggest tool you can have. If your level of self-awareness is through the roof, you will make better decisions about where you play, where you hang out, where you don't play, where people you avoid, rooms that you walk into, rooms that you do not walk into. You'll know where you thrive, where you die a death. You'll also be able to, when you really want an opportunity and you're fighting for over 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 other candidates, and you look at somebody in the eye and you say, I can do this job because of A, B, and C, and you really know who you are, they'll look at you and believe you. So I always, when I'm coaching or working with anybody, your level of self-awareness, it starts with you, right? Is really, really important. Mm. And, you know, if we're in a networking situation or we're in an interview situation, I don't know if anybody's listening here, they might think, oh, when I'm nervous, I talk really fast. Or when I'm feeling really vulnerable, I can come across as a little bit off and a little bit arrogant. And actually, you're not arrogant. And the amount of people I've interviewed over time and somebody in the room has gone, oh, I didn't like him, he was a bit arrogant. And I've gone, I don't think he was arrogant. I think he was nervous. Mm. You know, it's just so interesting. But if we know all this about us, then we can do something about it, right? Or not. If you don't want to, that's fine too. But I think any understanding of who we are starts with looking at where we came from, what experiences that we had as children. We know factually that the stuff that we went through, that we felt, that we experienced, impacts how we are as adults. So for me personally, it was, it impacted, it's kind of my superpower. I mean, I'm a resilient, you'd be struggle to find somebody more resilient, I can tell you. I don't really get frightened about things. I was chatting to somebody at a party this weekend. It was a two-year-old's birthday party, which is my life now, right? Like that's all I do on my weekends. And they said, oh, you founded a company and raised investment, weren't you scared? And I was like, well, no, not really, because I didn't have any eyes looking at me. You know, a lot of people, and he was saying, oh, you know, I really wanted to do this at university and go on to do this career, but my dad wanted me to do this, so I didn't want to let him down. And I was like, I feel bad for you. Like, I had it easy, right? I didn't have anybody watching me or nobody expected me to do anything. So I was so free. I could do anything. So I see it as a really positive thing, right? I do. And I also was exposed to quite a lot of, you know, other young people that were going through worse days than me. And when you're exposed to that kind of stuff, you have a very deep understanding of gratitude. So I'm resilient because of it. Fear, a little bit fearless. That's not to say I don't feel fear. I do feel fear, but I just get on with it anyway most of the time. And I always go to gratitude. And I learned that really young. When you're exposed to so much harshness in the world, it's really hard not to go to bed at night and think, God, thank God I'm me. Because there's always somebody having a worst. And so I was really, really good at understanding gratitude. And that served me well. That served me well. I think when we're doing anything that is a little bit difficult, when we're pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone, questioning our value, feeling a little bit rubbish, just going straight to gratitude. Because you can't, it's impossible to feel sad or low or negative when you're in a state of gratitude. So that's something that, it's kind of like my superpower.
Mm. Yeah, such a powerful story. And yeah, it's really interesting, this whole thing of once all the expectations are off, it's sort of like, yeah, it almost releases you to just have a go at whatever it is that you're wanting to have a go at. It is an interesting one, the no expectations. Like, because I even think about it, so it's something that I've actually thought about in my own life, because my dad never put high expectations on me because his dad had put so much expectation on him. And he always felt really uncomfortable about this feeling of having high expectations. And so he never really placed it on me. And he was sort of like, oh, you and your brother, like you're playing footy and you pushed yourself so hard anyway. Like I never really had to. But I had actually noticed then, particularly through my early 20s, I struggled when people put expectations on me because I wasn't used to the feeling. And so, you know, you sort of start out in your first job and stuff, and I'm in my apprenticeship and I've got all these, you know, these tradies all yelling at me because I've made a mistake and stuff. And you're sort of like, whoa, and you sort of, or even just people having positive expectations of you. It was sort of, I think it took me a bit longer than it might have would have to just be able to process that and turn it into a positive energy that could sort of drive me forward in a positive way. So yeah, no, it's really interesting, that topic.
I find that fascinating. There's a whole I don't know if you've watched the Simon Sinek there's a Simon Sinek talk around millennials in the workplace, and it's really, really fascinating. And he talks about how the parental norms came in. I mean, I don't know how old you are, what generation your dad was in. I think it's very, he says millennials, but I think there's, you know, it's not if you were born a few years that way or a few years that way. Yeah. I don't think it really matters, kind of thing. But what studies have shown is that we have a generation of parents who had it really hard. So their parents were coming out of the war. They were, it was very much that, well, we had to fight for everything. We had to walk 10 miles to school. You know, we had to, you know, we were rationed. So we had it hard. So you suck it up, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then when they became parents, they did the complete opposite. So what this talk is really interesting, the studies have shown, is that you had this millennial generation that, I mean, now, I mean, this talk was a few years ago. Millennials now are, you know, we're middle-aged, you know, millennials are not the young generation anymore. But at the time we were like the young generation. And Simon Sinek talks about all of the research that says that we don't know we're born now. What happened is that you've got a generation that have been told that there's no first, second, you don't win prizes. Just the fact that you had a go when you took part was great. So we have a generation that's now entering the workplace, and at the age of 21, they're failing for the first time in their life, and they don't know how to handle it. And it's a really, really interesting talk. If anybody wants to watch it and listen to some of the research, definitely, it's on YouTube. It's fascinating. And now we have, for the first time ever, five generations in the workplace at the same time. Yeah. That has never happened before. And yes, generations, you can say, you know, don't be stereotypical, you know, Gen Zs and baby boomers, you know, we're all different. You can't stereotype us, and you're absolutely right. You can't, but you kind of can. So based on technological norms, technology that they were that they consumed, the political landscape during the when you were developing, the parental norms, the societal norms, the political norms, the environmental norms. There are so many different things that happen that impact a generation that are very different to the next generation and the things that they experience and the norms that are around them. So I just find it so fascinating. But you are not alone going into the workplace feeling like that. There's a whole generation with you.
Yeah, that's it. Now I want to zoom forward. So you've spoken there about you got investment. And I imagine a lot of people, even if they say, you know, they launch a YouTube channel, they launch a podcast, but taking it to that stage of actually bringing people in, really scaling it up, it's now going to something far bigger than just something that you're doing, you know, within yourself and putting out there just your own stuff. What's that process look like to actually bring in investment? Who were the first conversations that you had to have with people to sort of kickstart that process?
Well, I do a lot of this now in that I work with, I do my career coaching and I work with people to elevate themselves in their career. But a huge amount, probably half of my time, I'm spending with founders and entrepreneurs that are looking to raise investment. And it's important to know that not all businesses can raise investment and should raise investment. It's business models that as soon as you raise investors, basically your investors have to exit. You know, they're giving you £1, hoping they're going to get £3 back in a certain period of time. So you have to remember that the moment you take investment, the company is no longer yours. The business is no longer yours. You are basically facilitating them getting their money back and a lot more. Otherwise, they would just buy a house, right? Or they would just invest in the stock market. So you kind of have to pick businesses. So businesses that can scale and sell really fast typically within a 5-year period or roughly around 5 years are the type of businesses that attract investment. And they tend to be the businesses that have it. And just by the nature of scaling super fast and exiting and selling, they tend to have a tech element. So service-based businesses don't always attract the level of kind of VC or angel investors, not to say that none of them do, but typically. And you just kind of have to really understand what the value is. I think that's the first thing you have to do before you go and talk to anybody, is I had to really understand what was different about us. The e-learning space in the UK was really, really, really almost non-existent. It was, and also I knew that we were specifically helping people in the first decade of their career. And that, again, that was a market that I didn't feel like was being treated very well. Like I said, you know, they were talking to people like they're stupid just because they were young. So I got my USP, so like my unique selling point down. And then bearing in mind, I didn't really know anybody that had a lot of money. That's not really the world I came from, as I alluded to earlier. I just started going to events. Like I just Googled, like, what kind of business events, where do you meet people? And just had a lot of conversations. I met a lot of investors that said no. I met a lot of investors that didn't get the vision. But because it's high risk. So for an investor to invest in an early stage business, they pretty much know that they're going to lose their money. Numbers typically are for early stage seed round, which is like really early businesses. An investor will invest in maybe 10 businesses. One will wipe its face. They'll just get their money back. 8 will probably go bust, but one will go huge. It will skyrocket and they'll make enough money 10 times over. They're kind of the numbers that they play with. So it's just having lots of conversations, understanding, like anything, if you're looking for a job, like you find out what the person wants to buy, you find out what problem they have and, you know, how you solve it. So it was just that. I mean, it was just all the recruitment stuff I've been doing for 10 years, sales, right? And then you find your people and then you can't build anything beautiful on your own. So I just found my talent. And again, recruitment, right? I already knew the people I wanted to work with me before I even had the money to hire them. You know, I'd been looking at who in the market was good. And that's the recruiter in me, right? Just yeah. looking at who you want to work with. Oh, that person's good. Maybe in a couple of years, I'll be able to hire here. That's how we did it. Yeah.
So understanding the ecosystem that you're about to step into. And then, yeah, sort of doing your research. Yeah, it's key career hunting advice, really. Understand where you're wanting to go and who are the players in there that you want to talk to, who are the key people that are going to have the other connections that you might need. And
because it's not complicated. Like I'm not particularly smarter than any, like that's not, it's just everyone is buying and everyone is selling. That's it. Same as recruitment. You just, all you have to do is work out what that person wants to buy, and you talk to somebody in the way that they want to be spoken to, not in the way that you want to speak. I was talking to somebody this evening. She's launching a business, and she was writing her customer brand statement. And I was like, you're right. You're saying all the things that you think are interesting. They don't care about all of that. It's like in an interview situation where somebody says, tell me about yourself. And you sit there and tell them about where you went to school, how many cats you've got, blah, blah, blah. They don't care. Or in an interview situation where somebody says, tell me what's your biggest weakness. And then what they're really asking you is, they're not really asking you, tell me your biggest weakness. What they're really asking you is, are you going to sit there and BS me to my face? Like, that's what they're, like, you've just always got to think, why is somebody asking me that question? Ask, what are they asking? Ask, why are they asking it? And what do they really want to know? And that's, you know, that's job hunting, raising investment for business, selling a chair, everything.
Yeah. What's the most foundational career advice that you would give to someone if someone's trying to work out how to get to the next stage of their career? And maybe before they start digging into the little nitty gritty details of how they can try and progress, what are some of the sort of building blocks that people need to lay for progressing their career?
I think there's loads. I think it's really complex, which is why I have a job, why I have a career. But if I was going to say where to start, when I would do the self-awareness piece, which I talked about earlier, really understanding where you thrive, where you die a death. And that is linked directly to your strengths. Understand what your unique strengths are, because you are not the bullet points on your CV. Like, what do you do in the world so much better than the other people that you know? Because we all have that superpower. We all have that zone of genius. And if you don't know what that is, ask people. Don't ask people that have known you for a long time or that really love you. Ask people that have probably only known you for a short amount of time, maybe 6 to 12 months, that are within a professional capacity. So they're not, because people that have known you for like 20 years, like your friends that have known you for 10 years or whatever, they'll see all kinds of beautiful, wonderful things. That's their job, right? Yeah. But what we're looking for is those obvious strengths, those obvious skills in the workplace that show up, and just ask people. And you'll see the same kind of things showing up. And what I would say is go deep on that thing, because too many people spend too many years trying to get good at all the other things. So I'm excellent at A, but I'm average at B. So I better spend my time getting above average at B. I better work on B. No. Leave B alone. Put B over there. You focus on A. So you work so hard on A that you are bulletproof, like you are untouchable at that one thing. And then you will always win. You will always, always win. If, you know, and I genuinely, yes, you want to be good at a few things. You want to be competent. I'm not saying you want to be rubbish, but I genuinely believe that everybody should pick their one zone of genius and put a huge amount of energy into that, so that you are known for that thing. And then even when the market is tough, even when there's a lot of competition, you are the person that people will think of and go to.
Yeah, I often think about like the weaknesses side of things. It's like you want to work on them enough that they get out of the way. It's sort of like you work on enough, like that whole self-awareness piece. You need to know what are the weaknesses that are really actually holding you back from stepping into your strengths more fully. And so it's like you work on them enough to get them out of the way, but you don't try and turn a weak, like your biggest weaknesses, sometimes they might naturally become your strength, but yeah, which is another angle on it. But yeah, it's honing in and doubling down on your strengths, I think, is definitely a really solid.
Work on your weakness until they get out of the way. That's brilliant, Alex. Great advice.
You can have that one.
Yeah, love that.
So, like I said, congratulations on launching the podcast. Really excited to follow along with that. What's next for Amy Baton? You've built this big thing. You've sold it. You've now got your child and enjoying being a mum. And now you're sort of getting back out there into the world. What's next for you?
So lots, actually. So working with ambitious founders and helping people, all that kind of stuff. Loving that. We'll always do that. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. But spending a huge amount of time with senior, mid to senior level professionals that are mainly women, but not exclusively women, that are looking to get into those senior roles. That's kind of where I'm working now. So I'm spending a lot of executive coaching, helping people navigate the workplace, but ultimately land the recognition and the opportunities that they deserve, and whether that opportunity is internal or external, whether it's actually not a new job at all, it's an advisory role or a board position or, whatever, just raising and elevating their visibility and confidence in the workplace. And I'm doing that through one-to-one coaching, but I'm also launching a group program in the new year. Just having a lot of fun and just getting back out there, right? It's like I've been quiet for a long time and I thought maybe my purpose would change, but it definitely hasn't. If anything, it's like, yeah, it's stronger than ever. So, and I've got a lot of things to say. I've got learned a lot and yeah, I'm still like that little Labrador. I still just want to help everyone.
Awesome. And you've still got it, because so I came across you on LinkedIn. I had a video pop up and I was listening to it. I was like, oh, this is just really good advice, really solid, really engaging. I'll reach out to her, see if she's open to coming on the podcast. And then I'm realizing you've only just started putting out like these videos quite recently again. Mm. And I was like, oh man, she's nailing it straight up already. And I was like, oh, that's really impressive. So you've still got it. You've still got really relevant, awesome stuff coming out. And so I encourage everyone to go and find you and follow along as well. So how can people find you if they want to hear more about you and learn from you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn. So I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. So it's Amy Bateman on LinkedIn. It's Amy, A-I-M-E-E. So my mum giving me a fancy way to spell it. I also have a podcast which is on Spotify and Apple, which my podcast is called Seen, Heard, Valued, which is also the name of my business. And I'm just starting YouTube again. So I think, you know, after such a long time of being everywhere, you know, 10 million people watching your content in 42 countries and your video courses and all that kind of stuff, it got a bit much. So I'm just it's nice to have a break, but yeah, no, I am definitely glad to be putting content back out there into the world. So come find me, come and say hello.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me today, Amy.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.